Now today, we turn your attention again to the Epistle to the Hebrews, chapter 11. Now in past studies, we've been looking at some of the characters who are mentioned in this chapter who lived their life on the principle of faith, as we thought of Abel and Enoch and Noah. These three men lived in that period of time preceding the flood. Then, following the flood, we considered four men, namely Abraham, his son Isaac, and then his grandson Jacob, and his great-grandson Joseph. These men, representing four generations, bring us from Genesis chapter 12 to the end of the book of Genesis. Now our study today will be verses 23 through 29 of Hebrews 11, and here we're dealing with a man who was called Moses. This takes us then into the book of Exodus. That is, the book of Exodus is the historical background to what we're about to read in Hebrews chapter 11. Here we're dealing now with faith as it relates to the man whose name was called Moses. Reading then at verse 23, by faith Moses, when he was born, was hidden 3 months by his parents, because they saw he was a beautiful child, and they were not afraid of the king's command. By faith Moses, when he had come of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin or the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. By faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he who destroyed the firstborn should touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, whereas the Egyptians, attempting to do so, were drowned. I'm sure the Lord will bless to us again the reading of the Holy Scriptures. Now here then, we're dealing with life that is lived on the principle of faith as it is manifested in the life of Moses. I think each of us will have to admit that Moses was a great character in human history. I've wondered at times about the training of the man, the great work he accomplished. Perhaps most of you are familiar with the fact that the life of Moses was divided up into three major eras. For the first 40 years of his life, he was born and raised in Egypt. For the second 40 years of his life, he spent almost, you would say, out of the sight of men. He was away in the backside of the desert, an unknown quantity. Of course, while there, he was in the school of training. And then for the final section of his life, the last 40 years, he was the great leader, the great commander of the people of God, leading them from the land of bondage to the borders of the promised land. Now, I'm going to suggest to you that in the verses we have read, there are three things we ought to consider. First of all, there was faith in the hour of crisis. That was at the time when Moses was born. Then there was faith at the time of choice, when he was 40 years of age, when he made his great choice. And then faith and the courage of a great commander at the time when he led the children of Israel from the land of Egypt, and then for 40 years commanded them in the wilderness. On each occasion, when he reached the particular crossroads, you might say, there was the exercise of faith. But it is interesting to notice that in verse 23, at the time of his birth, it is obvious that the child could not exercise faith. That's obvious. But we read that by faith Moses, when he was born, was hidden 3 months by his parents, because they saw he was a beautiful child, and they were not afraid of the king's command. Here then, there was faith in the hour of crisis. So this verse deals with the faith exercised by the parents of Moses. Now, if you were to go back again in history and think a little of the background to this, you'll discover that Moses was born at a time of great crisis in the history of his people. Have you ever taken time to consider the different people who have tried to exterminate the Jews? Of course, they weren't called Jews when they were down in Egypt at the time when Moses was born. They were called Hebrews, descendants of Abraham. But at that time, they were multiplying so rapidly that there had arisen a king in Egypt, one of the pharaohs, who didn't know Joseph. He didn't know how these people came to be there, so to speak, but he saw that they were multiplying, and he thought they were a menace to those that were the rightful citizens or inhabitants of Egypt, the Egyptians. And he was afraid lest that some enemy should come in battle, and if these Hebrews should join in with the enemies, they were really in trouble, that is, numerically. And so he decided to do something about them. He wanted to get rid of them. First of all, you remember, he told the nurses that when the children were born to these Hebrews, if it was a little boy that was born, just strangle him at birth. That would be the best way of getting rid of them. And so if there was no male children, very soon they would die out. But it so happened that these nurses feared God, and they wouldn't do that. And then he said, all right, if the children are born, we want you to take all the male children, and you'll throw your male children into the river. That's a command, so you'll be obedient to the law. It was at such a time of crisis that the little boy was born, and his father and his mother decided that they were not going to destroy their child. They believed God. They were God-fearing people of the tribe of Levi. And they decided that they would not destroy their child. Here was the perception of their faith. They saw he was a goodly child, a proper child. So therefore, it would be against the principles of God's law for them to destroy the child. I wished everybody today could have that same godly fear in their hearts, that children are a gift from God. They've got to be protected. There was the perception of their faith. And because of the perception of their faith, there was the protection of faith. They hid him for 3 months. I want you to picture in your mind for a moment or two, how did they manage to hide that little boy for 3 months? Remember, they were slaves in the land of Egypt. They were not living in mansions. They would just be living in little houses. There wouldn't be much room to hide the child, but they hid him for 3 months. I do suggest this, that after 3 months, it'd be very difficult to hide a baby boy. He'd be making some noise. People would get to know, and sooner or later, someone would give the report to the authorities. However, there's the protection of faith. And then there was the power of faith. They were not afraid of the king's command. And the day came when they put the little boy in that basket, that little ark made of bulrushes, and laid him in the water. Oh, they put him in the river all right, but they gave him something to protect him. They put him in that little ark that was daubed within and without, so that he was preserved. And while he was put in the place of death in the river, he was preserved by the little ark of bulrushes that was made for him. I suggest that all these things add up to what we have here stated concerning his parents. When he was born, was hidden 3 months by his parents because they saw that he was a proper or a goodly or a beautiful child, and they were not afraid of the king's command. In plain words, they believed God. That was their faith. Now then, there came the time when Moses, of course, grew up and reached maturity, and in spite of the fact that his parents had faith, there came the time when Moses had to exercise faith for himself. I trust that all my listeners today have learned this lesson, that no matter who your parents were, no matter how godly your father may have been, or your mother, they may have trained you well, that does not make you a Christian. Because your parents had faith in God, that doesn't mean that you have faith in God. There will come the time when you will have to exercise personal faith. And there came the time when Moses was faced with a great choice. And when he made his choice, it was on the basis of faith. First of all, there was the choice of relationship. Would he be related to the people of Egypt, or related to the people of God, these slaves who lived perhaps in the little mud huts? You see, he knew that by birth he was one of them, but by adoption he was taken into the palace, and Pharaoh's daughter had raised him as if he was a prince in the palace, and not a slave or a pauper out working on the brick kilns. But now he knew who his true relatives were, the people of God. And so he had to make a choice. Would he choose his relationship with the elite of Egypt, or would he choose his relationship with these downtrodden slaves who were called the Hebrews, the people of God? And now he chose the people of God. By faith, when he had come to age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God. I want to ask you, my friend, what is your choice today? Would you rather be numbered with the people of God, who may be a despised few in the world, or do you want to be numbered with the majority? Do you want to be numbered with those who have exercised faith in Jesus Christ, and the pilgrims on their way to heaven? Or would you be rather numbered with the men of the world who scoff at the Bible, and who sneer at the Christians, and who make fun of religious things? Who do you want as your relatives? Where will your relationship be? Will you be quite content to be one of those numbered with the ruined race of Adam? Or would you rather be numbered with the redeemed of the Lord? It's a matter of relationship. There's the choice of realities. There was the pleasures of sin for a season, or suffering with God's people for a season. Two distinct things. He was a man who on the one side could have the passing pleasures of sin, the pleasures of Egypt, which were only for a season. Or if he chose to be with the people of God, it would mean suffering. But that suffering would just be a light affliction, just for a moment, and would work for him a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. So there was the choice of realities. Today you and I are faced with the same thing. Do we want to have all that the world can give? Do we want the world's pleasures? Do we want the world's riches? Is that what you're after, my friend? The things that the world provides. Some people want the world's money, the world's riches. Some folk want the world's pleasures. But remember, these things, friend, are only for a season. He or she would be very foolish who tried to say that the world doesn't give you some pleasures. There are pleasures. Sin offers a lot of pleasure. But remember, the pleasures of sin don't last. One man has very tersely said, if you go out at night and fill yourself with the champagne, you'll wake up in the morning with the real pain. Or you'll have the pain, all right. What do you want? Do you want the champagne at night and the real pain in the morning? You see, sin has its pleasures. But remember this. While it may seem sweet to the taste, it's bitter afterwards. But then over against that, there's the suffering with God's people for a season. If you take your stand for Jesus Christ the Lord and take your stand with his people, you may have to suffer down here. But if a man suffers as a Christian, he should never be ashamed of it. So there's the choice of realities. Then there was the choice of riches. He could have the riches of Egypt, but these would soon vanish away and be lost. Or he could have a share in the riches of Christ, that is, in the riches associated with the Messiah for all eternity. It's an amazing thing, you know. Riches seem to take wings at times, and they fly away. You know, a number of years ago, at the time of the Great Depression, some people went to bed at night, rich with this world's goods, and they woke up in the morning to discover they had lost their all overnight. There were others back in Europe in the days just preceding World War II. They were rich people. They had much of this world's goods. I met one man. When I met him, he had nothing. He had managed to escape from Hitler's Germany. He moved over into Britain, and he told me when he landed on the shores of England, he went down and kissed the ground. He felt he was in a place where he had freedom, although he had lost all his money. Ah, the world's riches may be yours today, and they may be gone tomorrow. He was a man who could have had all the riches of Egypt that were within his grasp. He could have had all the treasures and all the pleasures of that land. But he made a choice. These things he saw would vanish away. They wouldn't last. They'd be all lost. But on the other hand, if he took his stand with the people of God, there were the promises that God had made to his people, and sooner or later he would come in and share in these great promises. And so he decided to let the things of time and sense go, as it were. The pleasures and treasures of this world meant nothing to him. He was going to lay hold upon the things of the future. He put them all in the balance, and he made his great choice, and he chose to take his stand with the people of God. That's exactly what is mentioned here in Hebrews 11. Because he choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin, that surpassing pleasures of sin. They were only there for a season. Esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. That is, he was looking onward to the eternal thing. Let me ask every listener today, are you satisfied with the things of time, or would you rather have the lasting things of God's eternal blessings, the pleasures that are laid up at God's right hand forevermore? It was by faith. Remember, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So he made his choice. And for 40 years he was away in the backside of the desert looking after sheep, an unknown quantity, until God broke into his life again, and God appeared to him at the burning bush and gave him his great commission. And so for the final portion of his life, he was a man who acted in faith. Here we have faith and the courage of a great commander, verses 27 through 29. He forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king. I suggest here was the calmness of faith. When Moses was threatened by Pharaoh, he stood calm and resolute. He knew that God was with him. It was God who gave him his commission. It was God who sent him into Egypt, and he marched right into the palace, faced up the great governor, the king, the Pharaoh of Egypt, and he said, "Look, I want to make one request of you. The Lord says, let my people go." The Pharaoh, as it were, looked down his nose at this Hebrew, and in effect he said, "Who are you to tell me what to do, and who is the Lord that I should obey him?" You see, Pharaoh thought that he was the Lord. He didn't know anything about the living God, the living Lord. Pharaoh thought he was the last word, and he is a man who to this Pharaoh was an unknown quantity, and he walks in and he says, "Now God says, let my people go." Here's the calmness of faith. And you remember, there were the plagues that came on Egypt time and time again. Pharaoh hardened his heart against the Lord and against Moses and against the people of God. And Moses stood calm and resolute, laying down the demands of God, "Let my people go." He says, "They'll go, every man, every woman, every child, every beast." He says, "There will not be a hoof left behind." And Moses would not compromise with Pharaoh one little bit. He stood calm. He was as bold as could be. He was a man of courage. And standing in the face of Pharaoh, he simply said, "We'll go. Men, women, children, and beasts, and not a hoof will be left behind." There was the calmness of faith. Here was a man who believed God, even in the face of the strongest opposition that the world could give. He forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king. How did he do it? He endured as seeing him who is invisible. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Then again, there was the covering of faith. On the night of the Passover, the lamb was slain, and the blood was applied to the doorposts, which was an act of faith, and they were covered thereby. Verse 28 says, "By faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he who destroyed the firstborn should touch them." Go back and read that famous chapter. "And when the word of the Lord was delivered to them, they believed what they were told, and they went and did all that Moses and Aaron commanded them." Here then was that reception of faith. And here was the response of faith. And they went and they killed the lamb. They applied the blood of the lamb to the doorposts. And then there was the repose of faith. They went inside, they shut the door, and they fed on the roast lamb. On the night of the Passover, the lamb was slain, and the blood was applied to the doorpost. That was an act of faith. That's what it says here: "By faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood." So here was the covering of faith under the sheltering blood. There was the conquest of faith. With the cruel enemy pursuing them and the sea lying before them, Moses believed God and in faith stepped forward and crossed over as by dry land. When the people were crying out in despair, Moses delivered the message to them. He said, "Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord." Then as he marched forward as on dry land, and took them over to the redemption side of the Red Sea. It was the walk of faith. It was the conquest of faith. They passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, whereas the Egyptians attempting to do so were drowned. So in the life of Moses, there was faith in the hour of crisis, faith at the time of his choice, and faith and the courage of a great commander.